Okay, we will call the October 2, 2020 Finance Committee meeting to order. Let's go to the agenda. Go ahead and move up, Amelia. First item is comments from the public. And again, you can comment on individual items, or you could comment now. Is there anybody who has a comment they'd like to make now? Not hearing any. Let's move to item three, review of the monthly delinquency and reinstatement of late fees and interest for delinquent accounts. Tom?
Okay. When the COVID pandemic began, the governor ordered that we stop disconnecting water meters, and we went a step further and we stopped charging late fees and delinquency fees and interest. And, you know, 8 months or what is it, 7 or 8 months later, you know, that dollar that's turned into a sizable amount. And so we're requesting permission to go to the board and reverse, you know, the decision that was made back in March, and once again start charging the late fees and interest on accounts so we can start getting caught up. We don't want to end up in June with $100,000 or more in delinquencies. So the suggestion is we start charging the late fees, which is a 10% fee when you don't pay your bill, and then we charge 1% interest each month on those amounts due. We're also recommending that the amounts that are past due currently not get the 10% delinquency fee charged, but we begin charging interest just as a matter of making that transition easier. So what we're asking for today after discussion is for the board, the finance committee, to allow us to take this forward to the board so it can be a public and a formal statement from the board. Questions?
Yeah, Amelia, go down to like the last sentence in this. There we go, right there. I just wanted to get a little clarification from you, Tom, on the last sentence there. It says, to avoid creating a situation of mounting debt, which eventually may require placing the account balances on the county tax roll in August of 2021, we recommend the reinstatement of charging the penalties and interest. What exactly does that mean? In other words, are we trying to, we're trying to do it now so when we put it onto the roll for Teeter, we get it? Is that what that means?
No, and if I'll explain.
Okay.
When we had the Poon Group review our finances and all of our accounting processes and practices a couple of years ago, they saw that we were taking individual accounts that had an active water meter, and we were placing them onto the county tax roll. And that was a practice they recommended that we cease because of the fact that we can, you know, collect our money today versus collecting our money in 18 months. So if we turn somebody's water off, they always pay their bill unless it's like a home that's for sale.
Right.
So these mounting bills, it was becoming practice for, it's not necessarily Rancho Marietta, but it's a practice kind of in the industry of cities and such, that people will let their March, April, May, June, or whatever bills go delinquent. And then the entity like us, we would put them, we roll them over to the county tax roll in August. So the people's debt would disappear and their July bill, they'd be back to owing nothing. And then the debt would end up on their tax bill in December. And we would eventually get the money months later. And so we decided, the board agreed, to discontinue the practice of taking somebody with an active water meter and putting their balances due on the tax roll. And we left it on our account so we could collect the money much sooner than later.
Well, okay. Yeah.
And so, for instance, you know, 4 years ago, the district put about 40 accounts on the tax roll. Last year, we only put one account on the tax roll. And that's because we only put an account that was undeveloped property. So the people with water meters pay their bills, because if they don't, they get their water turned off. But this is a mounting problem, and I want to start trying to relinquish the problem before it gets to be, like I said, $100,000 or $150,000 in debt that we have to complexities in extending when you get the money by placing it on the county tax roll.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yes. No, it makes sense now. I just was confused by the sentence. I wasn't exactly sure what you were trying to say there.
So, and John, you mentioned the word teeter, and the teeter program is after debt has sat on the county tax roll for a year, the county then can make a decision to pay us the money, which would be months and months, like 18 months later than the debt was due. They pay us the money and then they take on the debt themselves.
Right, right.
That's the place the county makes. So as you recall, with the CFD monies, we strip those monies from the tax roll, brought the debt into our own house, and we receive payment after issuing the demand letters.
Just as an aside question, in your discussions over that last process we went through, was there any indication one way or the other about the overall future of Teeter?
I doubt if the county's considering dropping the Teeter program anytime soon. They seem to be managing it better. I remember in San Joaquin County, the auditor controller chose to quit the Teeter program, but they had taken on some debt that was a real problem for them. It appears that Sacramento County is managing the debt they take in better than they did in San Joaquin County. So I don't see them. I'm not giving an official statement, but from the discussions I had with the assessor's office, there's no concern over the Teeter program, you know, ending anytime soon. They're just managing the debt they take in a lot more closely than.
Right. So that so in reality, then they continue to reserve the right to strip particularly large or difficult balances and continue to take. I would assume that what would be more advantageous to them would be to, you know, merely take, you know, $1,800 accounts as opposed to $180,000 account. You know, I mean, they're essentially spreading their risk over a wider base. So I was just wondering if there was anything in that conversation that led you to believe, you know, that the whole thing at some point might be coming to an end. Because I looked at the historical balances that they were holding. And of course, from 2008 down until this COVID crisis, you know, there was a steady downward balance. In other words, you know, as things got better, the balance got lower. But those years leading up to 2008, it was a rather remarkable number that they were holding in there. And if that pattern starts over again, and I don't know whether it will or it won't, as a result of where we are now economically, you know, it's something I think we want to keep an eye on going forward anyway.
Yeah, I think it's in the best interest of the district to collect these funds before the tax roll, because like I say, we're funding 18 months worth of debt for not getting any money out of it.
Is there any trigger? When they laid down the rules that you couldn't turn off water and discontinue service, was that done legislatively or is that a governor's order? How does that work?
It was one of the first orders that came out from Governor Newsom as part of the pandemic reaction.
So that's an executive action that he can make. And then we have no understanding then when that might change.
I have not seen an end date for that. We can check, but I don't think there is right now.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about actually understanding what the date is in this case and some of the others as I am concerned with whatever happens in any of these specific instances concerning the debt, that not like the last time that we're absolutely notified that we actually get the message. So I guess that really is on us to just keep on top of it.
Yeah, and we have, over the past few months, we've established a pretty good rapport with the assessor's office. So, you know, I'm comfortable with our knowledge of them now, but it appears that they basically have a board that sits down and looks at each individual property that remains on the tax roll after being unpaid, and they make a determination whether to leave it on the tax roll or to take it into the teeter program. And if they take it into the teeter program, they charge the 10% interest and 10% penalty fee and 18% interest, and that's how the county runs that program. So I don't know if there's any rhyme or reason for what they take in or don't. I just know that, you know, that it's a decision they make each year.
Yeah. And I would assume that, you know, if somebody down there probably has a barometer that they're looking at the overall debt, and somebody is considering what a safe harbor might be, like they may want to take 5% because it's money in the bank. I mean, if you're getting, you know, usury type interest and a penalty to boot, then it's a, you know, and you can manage your overall receivables, then you're gonna make nice money on that 5% that you put in the program. Ultimately, you're gonna get paid. So just minimize the risk by keeping the big ones out of there.
Right.
Okay. I'm fine with this. Tim, are you okay?
Yes. Everything is appropriate for me. We talked about it at the board. As things change, then we'll modify our practices, but I'm good with this.
Okay.
And we do have one hand raised, Mr. Burchett.
Okay. Yes, I see it. Okay.
I was wondering if you have any insight into who these people are that aren't paying their accounts. Are they freeloaders who are getting a free loan, or are they people who absolutely have no income and can't pay them and, you know, aren't going to pay the accounts even if you put the late fees on there? I mean, you know, do you have any insight into who they are?
No, Richard, we have not done that analysis.
Okay.
What we will do, and I probably should have added it to this staff report, and let me see if I did. But we will enter into pay agreements and get payment terms set up. Do I mention pay agreements in here? No. What we're doing right now is we offer people pay agreements, but there's no consequences just yet. But if we can go back to charging penalties and interest, I think people will go ahead and sign agreements to make their payments over a period of time. But no, we have not done the analysis on where these properties are located, nor have we reached out to figure out if they're low income or they just know that we're not collecting just now.
And
we obviously know who they are, but I mean, it's kind of shaky ground to get in there. I mean, I don't think that's any of our business. I mean, we can deal with them all, you know, in a prescribed manner, like we're doing here, but I don't know that we get in the weeds as to why somebody is or isn't paying. I don't know that.
We wouldn't report out who's not paying bills.
Right.
Well, I'm not asking one person versus another person, but generally speaking, you know, is it, you know, all 40 people, is this because they basically just can't afford it, or are there 40 freeloaders out there? You know, I don't care about one person versus another, but, you know, if it's 40 people that, you know, absolutely have no income, you know, it's not going to have any effect on, you know, this total $40,000 balance that's unpaid. Yeah.
I don't know that we can do anything beyond what we're doing now. We have a government order that restricts what we can do, what kind of action we can take. So, I mean, we're doing what we can do.
Well, yeah, you do have the option whether to charge late fees or not. You know.
Yes, we do. That's the option that I'm asking that we reinstate. And then
right. John, I would probably say we move this forward. We have policies and practices in place.
Yeah, I agree.
So.
Yeah, no, I'm good with it. Amelia, move me back to the agenda for a second here. Okay, item four, Rancho Murrieta Country Club Golf Course and Rancho Murrieta Properties LLC. We're there, or we're getting there. There we are. Tom, you want to start this again?
Just FYI, all these agenda items are mine.
Yeah, I know.
So So back in May, we received a letter from the Country Club and Rancho Marietta Properties LLC, basically claiming that the district had promised to reduce the tax or reduce the special tax rates on certain undeveloped properties back in 1998. And that at the time, the district should have lowered the rates over a period of the next few years for those types of properties. And so some of this stuff is really hard to sort out. So we actually had a consultant work with us to kind of unwind the history of if the district did in fact commit to lowering the rates after Measure J had passed. And we found that there was no valid, the request was invalid because there was no promise made by the district to lower the fees. And so basically everything is as it is. The voters approved it. The district charged the rates that were approved by the voters and have done so ever since. There were some site agreements, or I don't know if site agreement is the right word, but there were some agreements that were made in the early 2000s to leave rates flat for a while, and eventually they started getting up to the 2% per year. And there was a settlement agreement, I believe it was in 2003, 2004, whereby a special payment was made to the pension trust fund, sort of as a negotiated amount in the tune of about $78,000. That being a side point, we did not find any validity in the claim that the special tax rates were incorrect in the current date, or the sewer rates that the Country Club was claiming to have an adjustment for. So I issued this letter to both entities, Mike Martell at the Country Club and John Sullivan with Rancho Marietta Properties, working with Dick Shanahan, our attorney, and just say basically, we did not find any reason to be reimbursing or refunding any special taxes or sewer fees, or and in fact, even lowering the sewer fees at this time. So that's, I'm reporting back to the board, that was the action we took. And at this point in time, I consider the case closed. We've heard nothing back from either of the entities since we issued this letter. And my recommendation is that give you this information, and if you want me to put something together to take to the board later this month, we'll do that. Otherwise, we can just leave it as is.
I don't know we need to go any further with it. They were notified. I saw the CCs on your letter at the bottom. The board's already seen it. I don't know that going forward with it serves any real purpose. I think the process itself served a tremendous purpose. It took a long time to do this, and it took a long time to understand it. And it would be a good reference material if we were to ever go forward into another referendum or bond issue to make sure that what was spelled out was a lot clearer than what we worked with. But when we did the math on this at the end, I mean, it was coming out to the penny. I mean, we were right. I mean, we have not blown through the rates that we were allowed by Measure J to charge. Unfortunately, they're at this point in time not enough, but they are correct. So I think this one's done, unless you have something, Tim, you want to do or add.
Nope, I think we're good. Like I said, it's CC'd out, so we're good.
Okay. Okay, Amelia, next item.
Okay. We were asked by the board and by others to start getting into a much greater amount of detail with the security budget. This is something that's been in due for some time as we've migrated from using a variety of spreadsheets to actually using our accounting system to produce reports. And so Cindy worked with our Great Plains vendor, and Amelia, if you can go down to the spreadsheets, And I want to kind of just walk this through. As you can see, for this is the security budget as of the end of August for the current fiscal year. And the revenues are pretty straightforward, but as you get in and scroll down a little bit more, you can see that the gates, specifically the salaries and wages of the gates and all the expenditures directly related to operating the gates, the budget for the fiscal year is $864,000, which includes $251,000 of admin overhead based upon our approved cost allocation plan. And so when somebody wants to know how much do the gates cost, well, this is how much they cost. Right now they're costing about $54,000, or in the month of August, $54,680. The current year-to-date budget would have been $137,000, but we spent $134,000, so we're basically $3,460 under budget for the gates. And then if you go down further, you see patrol, and then you see that patrol is cost $45,000 for the month of August. And for the current fiscal year, the budget was $133,000 to date, and we spent $117,000. So the patrol budget currently is $15,000 under budget. And that is most likely due to the fact that we have so many vacancies right now, and we're utilizing contract staff and overtime to meet our patrol requirements. And then if you scroll down a little bit further, you can see the security administration costs, and that's just the general cost of running administration, including the salary of the chief. Currently, the chief is on a long-term personal leave. So what you see there is the balance of paying his salary for the month of August, and he currently, I believe, I don't know if he has any more time or not. So if you were to allocate that, you would allocate, you could basically split that in half and say this is the total amount that it costs to run the gates or patrol, because the administrative function of security is pretty evenly split between gate operations and patrol operations for supervision and leadership. So that is that's a detailed budget for security, and we're working to make sure that when we run the same report for water, sewage, drainage, and trash, that we have accurate numbers. So I'm happy to say, thank you, Cindy, for doing all this work, that we can now produce a more detailed budget that's accurate. And so hopefully by the next board meeting, when we deliver our budget packet, you will see all the budgets with this level of detail. And I just wanted to point this out, and I'm ready to answer questions. And if anybody gets technical on me at all, Cindy is available to really answer the correct, give us the correct answer.
Yeah, I, a couple of things. Number one, this is really terrific. I mean, I went through and I looked at the allocation, the overall allocation against that $265,000 number, and the gates are running about 50% of the cost, which honestly I thought, and I'm not disputing your numbers, I was really surprised. I thought it was higher. I thought we were dealing with a lower patrol number than we are. I guess patrol's 44%, and your admin overhead for everything is 6. And the other number I looked at, which in my world is different than the public world, was forget the budgets and you look at the actual. And essentially the burn here is, $54,000 over 2 months. When you include the overhead in your cash flow, which we're not really concerned about, would be higher if you throw the admin allocation out. But still, that's a number that, we need to recognize. I mean, it's at $54,000 over that 2 month period, works its way out to be, $300,000 plus over a 12 month period. So, but the numbers are great. I'm really glad to see these.
And again, if somebody sees something they have questions about, then we can get into the very great detail, and we may find that, the numbers are, that we need to refine our accounting of it. But right now I'm really comfortable that we're accurate with these numbers. Cindy and I spent a lot of time reviewing them and asking each other questions. So if we will entertain questions right now. if you guys are ready, if you have, if you're done asking your questions.
There's a hand, there's a couple of hands up there. John, you want to go ahead?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, John. I think we could get a lot of additional valuable information if, when you go up to, can we go up to the header? I mean, the revenue side on this report, all the details. Great. I have a hard time trying to understand why you break out admin three different times within a sub budget like this, but yeah, up on the revenue thing. I think it's valuable if you would take, you know, sales residential to be broken out, because you have in there, you have the undeveloped property billings, which between Rancho North and Riverview and Lakeview inside the gates are skewing these numbers. So you need to have that number because they convert differently when you end up having homes on them. And you're going to need to know that number because of Prop 218 and Prop 26. You know, again, don't want to get into the legal stuff, but same thing on the commercial is you've got Rancho Mirada Country Club shown in the commercial that's inside the gate. So if you could group the non-residential and you could, and or have the sales to residential inside the gate and the sales residential outside the gate, and you could have commercial and then show the undeveloped properties, you're going to have a lot better information when it comes to trying to figure out whether you're compliant or not, because you know you can't violate Prop 218 no matter what you, you know, what you show on where the revenue comes from. The services have to follow. So if we have the information broken out, we won't have to go back and find it. But I love the fact that you got this additional detail, and I appreciate the work involved in it. So it would be my suggestion you show the revenue more detail like you're trying to do on the expense side.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think we can take a look at that. We talk about revenue in a lot of detail later on in this meeting. So we can show you what kind of detail we can get, and I'll work with Cindy to see what's built into the system and how that's going to look.
You know, as just another tab on the Excel, Tom, maybe there's a way with what John was saying that if you take the individual categories that comprise the total tax, and like John made reference to undeveloped inside the gates as one of them, good data if we could see revenue, year-to-date revenue based on each category. If we did it that way, it might keep this report clean like you see it now without making all these little subs. But that those numbers going forward on a cumulative basis would really be helpful.
Okay, we can do it. It might take us a couple iterations to get it right, but it's gonna create some changes in our chart of accounts. But we can do it.
Okay. Well, and again, you know, don't run in here like 24 hours from now with this report. I mean, you know, we'll live. But as you're developing this reporting structure, if you're doing it inside Excel or however you guys are doing it off Great Plains or whatever, if there's a way to somehow easily pull out that data and then consolidate it into one place, onto one tab, for example, that would be useful.
Yeah, my first effort will be to build it into the canned reports we get out of Great Plains. I want to avoid writing ad hoc reports that for questions here and there. So let us take a look at it. Give us a few weeks to sort it out, and I'm sure we can handle it.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Cindy. This is really good. There was one more hand. Richard?
Yes, these are the numbers that I was interested in seeing. Actually, I've seen pretty much the same thing earlier when I looked at the audited year-end financial statements. You know, it breaks it out, gate versus patrol versus administration. And one of the things I was really interested in that drove me to this was the fact that numbers that I was seeing was inconsistent with the numbers that I was hearing coming out of the financial committee. And I think you've addressed this, John. You've been talking about a split between patrol and gate versus being 25 and 75% or maybe 28%.
Right.
And using those numbers, there was no way that the people behind the gate were paying for the gate.
Well, we can get into that in another conversation here, but we understood. Number one, we understood that the village and everyone else was making a contribution through property tax to, for lack of a better word, prop up the deficit that was created by the security tax. I mean, there's no dispute over that. And, you know, and I think the dialogue to this point has been, yeah, we recognize that, and yeah, we're working towards a way to fix it. But I played around with, you know, and Tom will get into it later, I think, you know, I played around with the property tax allocation, and based on the contribution of each entity, you know, if you play that against the total property tax allocation, who's paying what? And we can do that, but we understand what the problem is. I mean,
well, I'm saying there is no problem. The problem was this, you know, you're coming up with
numbers. If you're saying there's no problem, then I'm going away quickly.
Okay, good. I'm saying that you're coming up with numbers 25% and 75%.
Yeah.
That was the source of the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
what one of the things you should watch for, I think, is he's going to run surpluses for an unfortunate reason, in that we're running around trying to fill vacant positions. And when we have those vacant positions, it makes the budget look wonderful. And that will ultimately, as we go down the road here in the month 3, 4, 5, and 6, that's going to skew the number again. I mean, it's going to make the proportion of gate to patrol look even more different than what it is, and even more significant than what I had originally estimated it was. So, yeah, but I agree. These numbers are now coming to the forefront, and I think they're telling us what we need to know.
Yeah, originally I looked at the audited numbers and I saw no problem. And then, I mean, I started hearing about a 75-25% split and said, hey, if that's the number, then there's a problem.
Yeah. Right.
So, you know, those numbers were wrong then.
Yeah.
They were lower than
until we got the numbers to actually get, like we're looking at here, they were different than what they actually are, for lack of a better way to say it.
Okay, that's all I gotta say.
Okay.
And John, can I bring our attention to a chat that we've had?
A chat? Oh, you mean like a chat on this thing? Okay.
Yeah, a chat on this thing. And I just wanted to make sure that everybody in the meeting was aware that there is a chat. It came from Crystal Matter. And she said, can you confirm that all information previously provided will still be provided, just in a different format? Meaning no information previously provided has been omitted. And Cindy Chow, our controller, answered, Crystal, just a different format. All the columns remain the same as the report previously provided. And Crystal said, thank you. So I just wanted to make sure that was part of the record.
Okay, cool. No problem.
We do have one more hand up.
Where is that? John?
Yes.
Okay.
I think a distinction, and I don't want to get into the politics of a referendum, but the security revenue from Measure J and what Measure J bought, which was both gates manned 24/7, 365, and one patrol 365, 24/7, another 8,760 hours. If you just allocate a hourly rate to the gate and an hourly rate to patrol, the money that we're taking in from taxes exceeds what the gate personnel direct costs and what the patrol direct costs are. Even if you put $150,000 worth of admin overhead, don't allocate any taxes, but you've got, you know, $1,113,000 the way I see it, and you're telling us that there's more than that being collected currently. So I guess and maybe it's the committee or the board is afraid to say it, but at the end of the day, Measure J just bought three things. It bought each gate being manned and a 24/7 patrol. It didn't pay for all the other things that the district spends in the security budget. So the tax is doing what it was designed to do, but it's, you know, the district has morphed the security department into something that's not exactly what the tax provided for. I'm just wanting to get that out there, because it may be difficult for the board until you get to the point of deciding what the referendum or the adjustments are that need to be made to satisfy the community. But that's the basic problem. If you're spending $1.9 million and you're collecting $1.3 million, and $1.3 million pays for the staff at the gate and the staff of the patrol, that's the disconnect.
Okay? Yeah. And you know, I don't argue at all with that assessment, John, except what Jay does not do that we do. And I can't, you know, in 1998, I don't know how they crafted it and what was in their head, but there is no address for the administrative overhead that we consistently have charged and understand now that we have consistently charged, rightly or wrongly, at a lower rate. Okay, and what brought this crescendo was that analysis that took that up essentially 10%. I mean, and you know, I'm not debating whether it's right or wrong, and you're right. I mean, it wasn't factored. And if you look at Jay, and you look specifically, I think it's section 6.0 in that thing that addresses exactly what you said, we will provide. Now, we've morphed 22 years down the road, and we're doing something differently than they were in 1998. And you can blame, you know, 22 years times five people, that's 100 people, for how we got here or what we addressed. And even in gate operations, I'm not sure we'd be doing what we're doing, handling the volumes we're handling, if we hadn't put in some of the technology and paid for it and done some of the things along the way that we do now that make it workable. But you're right. I mean, the choice now becomes, do we retrench in that 1998 decision and do exactly what that measure said we should provide, which is the one guy running around 24 hours a day, or do we do something else? And we can do one or the other. And that's kind of, I think, where this conversation goes and where it ends is what do we do? Do we, you know, and if we're going to do something, everything to this point leads me to believe we need to do it by referendum unless we're going to retrench. If we're not going to expand or bring ourselves up to the existing level, then really the only choice is to do exactly what John said, is meet the needs of Measure J, and that's where we are. And I don't know, and again, what we have to find out is, does the community buy that? Is that what they want? So yeah, I don't dispute it at all. It's what it is. Tim, do you have any comment there or anything?
Tim, you're muted. Nope.
Well,
and you know,
cost him?
Basically, it's the cost of doing business that has overrun this budget. And I will tell you, I've been spending about half of my time, and staff in the office spends a whole lot of time on security-related issues. So like it or not, it's just not buying, we're just not buying a package from Amazon, and we don't have to cover the infrastructure, what it takes to for the delivery truck to show up to your mailbox. You know, we're paying for all of the costs of running a security department. And it's not just the three officers on shift every 24 hours a day. It's the payroll, it's the running the accounting system, it's my time, it's just a combination. This is why the cost allocation plan shed so much light on it. It's called transparency in government. And it costs money to run this department. We're just not paying the hourly wages. So.
And part of that too, Tom, and I agree with that. Part of that, when you start getting into the weeds on this, like we've been doing for months, even when they establish those baseline budgets that were used to fund Measure J, there was concern, for lack of a better word, that the focus, if you look proportionately at the way that the tax is broken out in those categories that we were talking about on Cindy's report, you know, there was attention given to the fact that, you know, in certain places, the rates needed to be lower if you were going to get this thing to pass. Now, that's the more and more I get into it, the more and more that becomes my opinion that, number one, the budget that was established as the baseline budget was too low. And you can see historically backing up into that before they ran into the 2018 crisis. There were even points that where the budget came down to 685, where we see numbers that are getting closer to a million. Okay, so at some point there was a lot of number manipulation to get it to where that board 22 years ago thought this thing needed to be so they could pass it. And we kind of been living with that part of the problem ever since. The other part of it is that they were philosophically in the middle along the way. You saw where not only in security, but in other areas, there was pressure philosophically again from boards that were trying to attain a no increase posture. And we had those. So naturally, nobody was going to focus in on the fact that the overhead allocation was too low for all of those years. And it virtually went up and down by 1% or 1.5% from 20 to 21.5. And then we go out and we do a sophisticated study with people who make a living doing this kind of stuff. And they say, what you were alluding to is, you know, we're living with this. I mean, we're spending more time on this than we do on our sewers. And really that allocation wasn't right. So, you know, when you propel it into that package, you wind up with this $2 million security department that we have now, or $1,990,000. And you know, it's a problem. Everybody understands now what the numbers say, and now it becomes a problem stepping off from this point as to what is it we're going to do to fix it. You know, so, but so far I concur with Richard, I concur with John, and I concur with you that we've come a long way, and that I think we understand it, you know, and now we can deal with it.
John, this is Amelia. It looks like Mr. Mabee has returned to the call. So Tim, I think that the question to you was, what do you think?
Thanks for stopping by, Tim.
He got kicked off. Yeah, it's having technological difficulties.
It's the least I can do. No, I think the dialogue is great. The report is what we needed. We made a couple of modifications, and we can make it'll be obviously agenda item on this upcoming board meeting, and we'll go from there.
The other thing, just so everybody, Crystal, a question. I'll get to you in one second here. I get these, and I've never had these before. I got it the other night when I was on that on a fire related meeting, you know, for the fire council. I'm getting these flashing messages now and again that's telling me my internet is unstable as well. And I wonder if Greenfield can support all of this Zoom stuff that's going on, because the other night it was just a disaster. And I've been fortunate all these years. I mean, I have really, really good internet where I live, and now I'm getting these messages too. So I don't know what that means, but if people start disappearing, I think that's the reason. Crystal has a question, Amelia.
So I want to make sure that I'm understanding what's being said correctly. I think there are a couple Johns on the call, so I apologize. If I'm understanding correctly, Measure J approved two people at the gate and one patrol officer 24/7. And if I'm understanding correctly, based on our call today, what is being said is that the administrative overhead is being lumped into the Measure J funds, and that is what is, whether correctly or incorrectly, that is what's causing the delta or the lack of funds to sustain security as we know it. If that's true, then then that's an incredible detail, because what I've been hearing over the course of the last month is that we have to take a look at how security is funded and what security looks like. And John Merchant, you did a great job on the presentation a couple weeks ago as to what that could look like. But if it was never intended that administrative overhead be part of those Measure J funds, then why is there a referendum for how we pay for administrative fees rather than looking at revamping security? It seems like the emphasis is being placed on the wrong thing, if that makes sense.
I understand the question. First, there's a couple of things. I, to be honest with you, I don't think anybody will ever know what was in their head when they decided what that $684,000 baseline budget was consistent with. What they put into the referendum that the voters approved didn't break it out, but specifically the other John Sullivan, who made the comment of what it was supposed to pay for, it's very clear in Measure J that is exactly correct. What John reiterated is what it says. There's two things going on here. We have integrated, and to be honest with you, one thing I didn't go back into Michelle and Tom and everybody else working on this didn't go back into, I think, is I don't know how far back we were allocating overhead, but I know it was back to the 2005-2006 period. Number one, it probably wasn't enough when we were doing it. The other part of this, and we've met this, okay, by for a while there, once we went upside down, and in the real world of allocating overhead, we did go upside down, and we went upside down a lot earlier than the last 3 years that we were actually contributing property tax allocations. But because we were really underestimating, underreporting that admin overhead, what we did was we built a chart at one point just to say, okay, if we had increased that allocation on a month-by-month basis, what would it have, I'm sorry, year-by-year basis, what would it have looked like? And what it you know, these were hypothetical numbers. We were adding like 2-3% on a systematic basis to compensate for the increase in overhead. And what it shows us, essentially, in that concept, that we went off the rails years ago. I mean, it wasn't like the last 3 years because we started contributing. We've been off the rails. We were just not correctly reporting and subsequently did not see it. That part of it is what it is. The other part is if you go to the consumer price index, you go to the government numbers, I think we're plagued with the fact that a 1998 dollar, I believe, is worth about, it takes $1.65 in today's world to cover the expenses of that 1998 dollar. And the 2% doesn't cut it. And the only way it cuts it is if you throw out the administrative overhead, and then you make an argument, well, then how does it support itself, or who supports, who pays the bills, who buys the cars, who does all those other things. But unless you do that bare bones concept, it won't work, even in that environment. So it screwed up. I mean, you know, and it's been screwed up for 22 years. And then what we've tried to do, or what I'm trying to do here, is to understand as we build a base budget, a baseline budget that we will have to establish, because we will have to have some kind of a systematic adjustment, whether it's CPI or a percentage on a yearly basis, to go forward for the next 22 years. Before we can build that baseline budget, we have to know what we're going to put in it. And believe me, this time it has to have overhead in it. And this time it has to accommodate, hopefully, what the community perceives to be security as they want it to be. Okay? If we just accommodate, or, and maybe the referendum tells us, or survey tells us, and we're getting ahead of ourselves, that maybe status quo is okay. I mean, maybe there are people who want more than that, but maybe there are more people than that that think we're spending what we ought to spend. So we got to find those things out, but we've got a whole item on this. Let's wait, and we'll do that in a few minutes. Does that help, Crystal, at all?
It does.
I know it's not what you want to hear, but asking if it helps.
I appreciate your transparency and your willingness to explain it in detail to me. It still looks like the emphasis is being placed in the wrong on the wrong concern. So if we look at potentially paying for a pull on what people want, that's not the right thing, because perhaps the money that the Measure J money is sufficient to fund security as we know it. So why would we as the taxpayers pay for a poll when personally I think you could also do things cheaper and talk to the residents, but I know that there's kind of a that would take time and a lot of effort, but the emphasis is on the wrong place. It should be, how do we fund administration, not should we revamp security because money has been allocated, money for Measure J has been allocated to administration over time. And that's just my opinion, but what an incredible point that John Sullivan brought up, and it really sheds light on the issue that you all have been working on and what lies ahead.
Can I make a comment here, John?
Sure, go ahead, Tom.
So we're, as an entity that provides water and sewer services, we're governed by Prop 218. What that means is that the total cost of running water and sewer has to go into our water and sewer rates. And we can't charge more for water and sewer to help supplement security. So under a proper way of running a government entity, we went out and we had a formal cost allocation plan developed. So if somebody wants to come and say, is Rancho Marietta taking its revenue and supporting security with their sewer fees, we can say, no, we are not, because we're taking our cost of doing business and apportioning it to security, drainage, and garbage, as well as water and sewer. So Rancho Marietta is really a different organization as a special district, in that we fund a security department. But there's a cost to doing business. You know, we have the lights on, we have administration, we do what we do, and you also have to supervise security, which is something that Measure J did not address. They just addressed the officers, three officers, 24/7, 365. So in doing a correct cost allocation, it brought to light that security was actually costing a lot more than we were representing. And if you look at the budget, you'll see that the amount of money we're collecting for sewer fees is not supporting the sewer budget. And this is a discussion we're going to have come March, April, May, and June, that to be legally responsible under the Prop 218 requirements, our sewer rates have to fund sewer, our water rates have to fund water, and in tune with that, security has to fund security. So that's why there's a big jump in administrative overhead, because we had a professional firm who does cost allocations do a cost allocation plan. So, you know, people say Prop 218 is related to security and drainage and trash. It is kind of as a reverse issue, because you can only charge for sewer and water what it costs to run those. And then Measure J funds drainage and security. So I'm probably getting way too deep into this, but we're required to run a security department. It costs money, and this is how much money it costs. So the Measure J should run the full cost, should pay for the full cost of running security. Well, we can't run it with just Measure J money. You can't just have people showing up doing their own thing and expecting it to run correctly. You have to supervise, you have to lead a department, you have to support the department. That, I'm off my soapbox.
Yeah, and the other part of this now, I think part of the sleeping giant we have here now, in that we went out and we did this overhead allocation and had it done professionally. Now that we have it and the world knows about it, if we were to say, okay, now the way we come back into balance is we go back to, you know, step one, which was taking the 31% back to the 21%. And then step two, if you go back further in years towards 1998, ignoring it completely, we're at the point now where we've uncovered all this stuff. We don't survive an audit in that capacity. I mean, you know, we now know what the real numbers are. We all acknowledge that there were mistakes made over a 22-year period. And now we got to fix it. And in fixing it, I just want to make sure that we are understanding, as we propel ourselves into the next 22 years, do we want to stay exactly where we are? Do we want to change? Do we want to grow? And that's the kind of input we're going to need to establish a baseline budget if we're going to at least bring the revenue up to the actual cost. So I'm me too. We've beat this to death. If there are no more questions, we can move on. You haven't heard the last of it. Trust me, we're just getting started here. So
Mr. Merchant, I'm sorry to interrupt, sir, but we do have two more hands raised.
Oh, okay. John.
Yeah, thanks, John. I need to ask this question to delve into what that, you know, I don't think I've seen that report that you guys have been referring to, but is this done with a formal labor distribution?
Yes.
System that we have? Do we currently have everybody who's above the patrol and the gate turn in a labor distribution with their time card for what departments they worked on and yes. what they actually did?
Yeah, I asked that question to Cindy while we're having this discussion, and we will go back and look at, because we do have patrol officers that work the gate, and I want to make sure that within our payroll system that gets distributed correctly.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the labor distribution report for the non field people, whatever the overhead we keep referring to is, such as all the supervision and reporting and all those other things. The other thing that, you know, even though I guess during the good years that wasn't a problem, but we have the district by policy took on the responsibility to work with RMA on non architectural non-ARC enforcement of their rules I'd love to see on the labor distribution report down in the field how many hours a month and how many hours a year that's been taking up, because that's not in the ordinance either. That's something that was added on by the district's board on a policy matter, and that's I'm sure contributing to the overall overhead costs and how much of our direct labor is being eaten up with those non-ARC rule enforcements for things that RMA would like to see done.
Yeah, I get it. I mean, the whole, there's a couple of things, a couple of points here that one is, you know, been around forever, is that of all the CSDs on earth in California, there is nobody you can go call and see what they're doing, because we are it. We are the only ones doing this. And I think some of this, from what John was referencing, goes back into the weeds of when we first got here, where we threw this in 84 into the lap of the CSD because of historical problems we had in RMA's ability to collect money should some hostile developer decide that they no longer wanted to pay it. And then we had the battles over what we were charging on undeveloped property, and we had all the stuff that related to it. And as this conversion from what was an RMA entity became a CSD entity, there is stuff, or there are stuff that came along with it. And some of this whole business of enforcement on the other side is part of that. And I think part of the question we need to ask going forward is it time maybe even for somebody to take a look at whether, I use the analogy, this should be done by somebody in an RMA polo shirt and a Prius, where, you know, our security labor rates are in this, with labor and fringe, are in the $70 label, $70 an hour category. And I know you can do that other places for a whole lot less money. So there's a lot of stuff here that's got to happen before we actually get to the point where somebody might vote on it. Richard, was that you? You have another question?
Yes. I wanted to respond to something Crystal said. I think there's a simple answer to what she asked, and I don't think she got it. I mean, she seems to be concerned that administrative costs are being allocated improperly, that it's not covered by Measure J. And to me, I think the answer is clearly, yes, it is legal. For instance, Measure J authorizes three patrol officers, but, you know, that covers more than just their wages. There are administrative costs as part of providing those, and it's a legitimate, I'm not an accountant, but it's a legitimate accounting to allocate that. And I don't think there's any question that that would be covered by Measure J.
Yeah, and it, you know, even without getting into that argument, Richard, you could, I guess, say that, okay, well, let's say it from the other side, okay, that there should be no overhead allocation period in the measure, in what we get out of Measure J. Well, I mean, where we are now is we're getting it out of property tax allocations, and we're eating up $450,000 worth of that $705,000 that we get. We're getting it. I mean, and again, it's just another one of those things that, yeah, we're getting it, but it's not right. I mean, it's just really not right. And ultimately, if we just continued on the status quo without doing anything, ultimately we will eat up the whole $705,000. I mean, over the next 22-year period, if you go back to those the cost of money statistics and whatever that cost of money is going to be 22 years from now, we will have outrun this whole thing again. And you know, another 22 years will have gone by to equal 44, and we will have not fixed the problem. So
I just don't want anybody to go away with any misconceptions. And it's a misconception to think that those administrative allocation costs are not covered by Measure J.
Yeah, no, they are. And you're probably right. But if if they are covered by it, I'm not sure they were effectively considered when the initiative was developed. And they came up.
Yeah, but she's suggesting that it's illegal. Yeah. And yeah. I'm saying, no, it isn't.
No, okay. Yeah, no, I don't think it's illegal either. More questions? Wow, we can move on, Amelia. Hurry up.
Okay, this next item has to do with the CFD 2014 bond payments. This is a complicated one. Basically, everybody knows that, or most everybody knows that we discovered that the special levy from the folks who took out the Melrose bond, they weren't being collected over the past 3 years on a scheduled basis, on a properly scheduled basis, in that the county 3 years ago took the debt off the tax roll and put it into the TEETER program, and we received a check from the county to cover the fiscal year 17-18 bond payments. And the 18-19 and the 19-20 bond payments were not made by the agency who had to pay them. And so the assumption was that the county was taking these items off the tax roll and sending them to the TEETER program, and the district was getting the money. I say it a lot, but we inherited some difficult accounting challenges over the past few years. And as we clean these things up, we uncover things. So what we uncovered is that the 18-19 and the 19-20 bond payments, to the tune of about $689,000, just to scroll down a little bit more, Amelia, weren't collected. And that caused us to take the monies from the county and make the debt our own. And then we issued a demand letter, and we ended up a few days later collecting $851,000, of which $689,000 were the special taxes we needed to collect, or the direct levy that we needed to collect. That term's wrong there. Penalties and fees. And so we get this big check, and then we sit down and we say, okay, how in the world do we distribute this $851,000 correctly? And so we're doing an audit, and it's I'm sorry, but it's difficult. And somebody might think it's pretty simple. They're welcome to come in and do it for us. But we're doing an audit that it's telling us that the last couple bond payments that we made, when we send money to a company called Wilmington Trust, who then releases funds to the bondholders. If you'll scroll down a little bit more, you see right there, that's the bond payments that we needed to have collected to date, about $1.8 million. We have now collected all that money, but in the process of making the payments to Wilmington Trust in 18-19 and 19-20, we ended up having to utilize the reserve money in this last payment, which creates a notice to the national bondholders and the statewide bondholder monitoring groups, EMMA, EMMA, and CDAC, which is the California bond monitoring system. And it turns out over the past probably 12 months, we've actually spent district funds to, and if you scroll down to the bullets, we've actually spent district funds to pay the bond payments that were the responsibility of the folks who took out the debt. And so before we deposit this $851,000 to Wilmington Trust, we need to do some things, and we need to allocate. First, we have to repay the districts for the amount that the district loaned to make the bond payments, including interest, and put them back into the district's bank account. Second, we need to send whatever money there is left over after we get the district funds to Wilmington Trust, and we need to replenish the bond reserve account, which is supposed to be at $391,560. We drew down the reserve to make the latest bond payment. Third, we need to properly allocate the district administrative overhead fees that we're paying that get charged to the Melrose bondholders. And last, the balance of the funds from penalties and fees will be placed into Wilmington Trust under the terms of the bond agreements as required. So this is complicated. I want to make it really clear before I report back the real accounting of what numbers go where. And I can't promise I can do that before the October 21 meeting. So I'm going to come back in November, first to the Finance Committee with the complete accounting, and then we'll go to the board and kind of map this out so everybody in the community knows how this worked. We're also working with the two entities, the entity that tells the county how much to charge on people's tax rolls, that's called National Bond Services, and Wilmington Trust. And we're gonna go into a situation where they talk to each other and we're not the middleman, which is a mistake the district made when they initially activated this bond. So in a perfect world, we're just there in case we need to issue letters of foreclosure or something like that. And the people who tell how much money is to be collected are talking to the people who are taking the money from the taxes and issuing their payments to the bondholders. So yes, we did utilize district funds to make the bond payments. Yes, we are going to collect interest on those funds as we sort out the $851,000 check. So it's just gonna take some time and we will be totally transparent and it'll be a nice spreadsheet that people can look at. They just need a little bit of time to make that happen. So I'm ready to answer questions.
Richard, go ahead.
I'd just like to say thank you. You already answered my questions. I was wondering how the hell this happened, and you know, apparently it was a mistake that we got in there as a middleman. So I'm happy to hear that that won't happen again. I am just curious, how much money did we loan over these years? What was the number?
I don't know yet, Richard. Okay.
Is it hundreds of thousands?
Hold on. I don't want to report a number that's not correct.
Okay, that's okay. I mean, are we talking hundreds of thousands or?
You know what? I'm not going to answer the question until I have a solid answer.
Okay.
Whatever money we did loan.
It is squeezed, Richard. I believe it is squeezed into a smaller period of time. Okay, this is not, you know, this is not your string it out 4 or 5 year thing. There were a couple of things went off the rails rather dramatically here. I know from when I started asking questions, when I started looking on the county rolls to see where there was concerns over the amount of property tax on some undeveloped property inside the gates here, that I started to ask the questions. Number one, about Teeter and the safety of the program. And I was assured at that point it was safe. And number two was, you know, is there a chance that, you know, in view of the fact that these are such large numbers that they would not accept those? And I came away from those questions. They were in the board meeting. They're in the tape somewhere. You know, this is Sacramento. There are other counties that have done that. But much while I was asking that question, I, in my mind, had lumped this into what I thought was a 1 year problem, and really it was a 2 year problem, the numbers. And little did I know, and anyone else know at that point, that they had already bounced 1 year out of Teeter, and we were preparing when we did get notified to have another one bounced out of the program. So part of this problem occurred in the fact that part of the discovery here was that it wasn't a 1 year problem that we had. It was a 2 year problem, and we were taken back by that in that we weren't really feeling like we got sufficient notification. And we had personnel issues and people coming and people going, and call it what it is, okay? We missed it, and we flat out missed it. And you know, you already made the point, and I will make it again. We are taking steps that we never miss it again. And that extends into what's still down at the county. I mean, this covers the bond payments, but there's another $750,000 down there in unpaid fees that should come directly to the district. That's our money. and that money's down there, and that money gets rolled into a payment plan that gets paid out over X number of years. So we need to be on top of this whole problem from this point on. So if there's a default on that five-year payment plan or a default on anything going forward, that we're in the middle of this right from the very beginning and that we're not chasing it, you know, a year down the road. So I think we've got it under control. I mean, there's no good explanation for why it got out of control, but we're dealing with it.
I'm gonna bring the attention to the table I asked Amelia to post again. And basically the first couple of years of the bond payments were made out of monies that were put into the accounts from the sale of the bonds. And in about 16-17 is when the debtor was required to start making the payments. So I will tell you this, we are 100% current with collections from the bond, from the debtor. So they're completely up to date. We've received the money from Peter, we've received the money from the demand letter, so they're current. And we just have to get our accounting in order. And so you will see a spreadsheet that says the district loaned payments for this bond on this date, this amount. Since that time, it's earned this much interest, and that amount out of this $851,000, when we calculate it, will go back into the general fund. And in the near future, I mean, we have a lot of money in our account right now. We need to make a contribution to our reserve funds. And so that's another big ticket item on my list to get to.
And just to bring total transparency to this overall problem, I mean, and I know from when Gail reported it out the last time, understand that the bond payments have been made, but there's a bunch of money down at the county that is owed to us, okay, still. And you know, that's as making sure that we stay current with this bond issue is to make sure that we're on top of that, because ultimately that money's got to come to us. And unlike the bonds, that's our money. I mean, we're just passing this bond money through with the exception of the interest and the penalties, but the rest of that stuff down there that's coming our way is actually our money.
Okay, that's all I have.
Ready to move on? Let's go.
What do we got next? So this is really just an informational item, but at the last Finance Committee meeting, we requested that we be allowed to go directly to the board with our award for our next auditing services. So we had put out an RFP, and in between the last committee meeting and the board meeting on September 26, we selected Richardson and Company to become the district's external auditor for the next 3 to 5 years.
I think that you skipped an item.
I did.
On item number 7, discuss potential reorganization negotiation of the 1984 agreement related to the CIA ditch.
Well, anyway, Tom, switch them around. I don't think it's a big deal. Do what you're doing and then go back to number 7.
Okay. So basically, we got 5 good bids. We selected a company called Richardson & Company to begin doing our audits. And the district is required. Amelia, if you could go to the letter, please. The district is required to have an independent auditor go over our books every year. And over the past, I think, 9 years, we've had the same auditor, which is too long under general accounting standards. And so we chose Richardson & Company through a good process. We went to the board and got the board to approve the contract. And this is just informational Finance Committee that we've entered into an agreement with Richardson and Company. If you go down to fiscal impact for the audit, the 1920 books, the 2021 books, and the 2122 books for those amounts that you see, we also have an agreement for an optional 4th and 5th year if we choose to go that direction. So if you have any questions, Cindy's available to answer any technical questions, or I'm available to do the same as best I can. this is really just us doing business as usual and letting the finance committee know specifically and be able to ask questions on this decision. So I'm ready for questions.
Unless somebody has some time, I went through it. They have a rather impressive list of clients, all related very well to what we do. If you guys are comfortable, I'm comfortable. If Tim's comfortable, we'll just recommend it to the board.
Yeah, I'm good with it, John. Thank you.
Yeah, if anybody in the community is interested, their response to the proposal, if you just start scrolling down a little bit, Amelia, their response to the proposal that we awarded is in the packet. So you can read about who they are, you can look at the resumes of the auditors, you can look at all the special districts and cities and such that they've done work for, as well as, you know, auditors also get audited. So the last page is a letter from an independent audit company that audits the audit firms.
Yeah.
This is John Sullivan. This is the cost of doing business at the district.
What's that?
I said, this is part of the cost of doing business as a special district.
Probably so, cost us $6,000 just to read this thing. And I did read it, by the way. Because it's cheaper for me to read it than it is for you to read it.
And 30-something is allocated.
Talking about the audit? The audit?
No, the auditor. The auditor. No, this is.
Yeah, I think they're really qualified.
Yeah, they are. I mean, there's no question about it.
Okay.
I think it's a good pick.
Are there no hands up?
Go back to 7 then, Tom.
Okay. And there are, I know John Sullivan will have something to say about this, but basically the district entered into an agreement with the owners of the CIA ditch, which is a pretty amazing feature at Rancho Marietta. And so the district is 1/3 basic owner of an agreement whereby we share the cost and operations of maintaining something called the CIA ditch. And the CIA ditch begins up at the Granley's Dam and ends up meandering down to property on ranch lands to the south and west of the district. And along the way, it does a bunch of amazing things. But the agreement is really not in the financial best interests of the district as we look at it today. And so we want to meet with the partners of the ditch, and we want to, which includes the two large ranches to the south and east, or south and west of the main district area. We want to meet with them and try to renegotiate this agreement and bring it up to, you know, the modern era, and allow the ditch, which is what is, you know, a big deal today because it's what feeds water into Laguna Joaquin, which if we do it the way things used to be before we started throwing chemicals in there to kill the midge flies, the water would be refreshing Laguna Joaquin on a regular basis. And it's just not able to do that right now because of the outflow of the chemicals and such that would end up going to organic farming, which is, you know, something that's really important these days, to have organic farming have a way to make it happen. So basically this can be, I just want to let the finance committee know that this is something that we want to go forward with, and I want to get your feedback. And based upon your feedback, we'll take whatever action is necessary. So I'm open to discussion on this item.
We Tom and I have spent a lot of time, preliminary time on this, including two tours from one end of it to the other. It is a remarkable entity worthy at some point of a feature story for the rest of the community, most of which probably doesn't realize it's here. But there's not a lot to say at this point. I mean, we need, you know, we understand now, I think, you know, how it functions. And I think we're beginning to understand the amount of of labor and administrative overhead that it requires to operate it. I think we're getting into understanding the original agreement itself and how we play into that. At some point, I think we will have to come to the board with some kind of a recommendation, but we're not there yet. I mean, this is more informational at this point than anything else, unless Tom, you have any, or Tim, you guys have anything more to say.
A couple of things, John, thank you. I would say if we're gonna move, I think we have to, just prudent because the document's so old, it just needs to be updated. But I think if we're gonna enter into formal negotiations, that's in fact what we'll do. And the board can give us that direction next board meeting to do that. And then if in that negotiations are the current outstanding costs, bills, or what have you, that is all kind of wrapped into one to address this process from what we inherited, what we have, and to where we're going. So I would probably say it's an agenda item with the action required that would give staff direction. We put it on this month's board meeting. Thank you.
Okay. Tom, any more on that one?
Nope. If nobody has anything else to say, we can move on.
Okay. Amelia, get us down to number 9 there.
So basically, there's been a lot of discussion recently about basically security and how it gets funded. And at the last board meeting, we were instructed to go into the weeds very deeply and identify where the money is coming from for security. And you know, you get the same percentages for drainage. So we're able to get from the county taxes, the assessor's office, the amount of tax that's being assessed by property for every parcel in the district. That includes the Bel Air, that includes the golf course, that includes each individual home in the Mobile Village or Murrieta Village, and south and north. And so we worked through that whole process. And Amelia, if you'll go to the table, please, it'll all fit. So our property taxes that we collect, can you scroll up a tiny bit more? Yeah, our property taxes from the assessor's office says we're gonna collect $702,000. It's gonna be more than that because as homes sell, we get an increment more from property taxes. But as you can see, for inside the gates, the residential properties are generating 91.5% of the property tax and 83% of the security special tax. The commercial properties behind the gate are contributing 0.2%. And of the special tax, 6.4%. If you go look at the gardens, the new 78 homes there, they're not completely sold yet, but they're paying 1.5% of property tax. The village is paying 2.2%, and the commercial is paying 4.4%. So property taxes outside the gate are contributing $58,000 to the district, and inside the gate, 644 of that 702. And then you go to the special tax and you see that outside the gates are producing $149,000 in the special tax to fund security. That is Measure J, and 89.5% or 1.26 million is coming from behind the gates. So if you look at the budget, that 1.416068 is the money that's budgeted from the taxes, from the special tax for security. And this is the answer to the questions that we've been being asked. Where is the money coming from to fund security? And now we aren't putting $702,000 of the property tax, we're putting it 460 some thousand, but that's the breakdown. And we have this down by parcel. We can go We can tell you unit one, how much they contribute in behind the gates, unit two, all the way to, the commercials. So the table speaks for itself. So we'll answer questions or entertain discussion. Are there any hands up?
I have mine up.
Okay. Go ahead, John. You go first.
So I appreciate the table, but I think the table needs, just like we talked about in the previous agenda item, needs to be appropriately expanded so that tax revenues residential north, tax revenues residential south, residential village, residential Murrieta Gardens, tax revenues from the country club because they're non-residential inside the gate, tax revenues from commercial, theoretically all outside the gate, tax revenues from undeveloped north, tax revenues from undeveloped south. And when you have those all broken out, then you can see really who's paying for what the numbers are. And what you'll find is the same thing we just talked about, is that we have, I don't know, in the gates, you know, well, I don't want to go into the detail. I think you have to have all those breakouts to actually have a legitimate conversation about this, because in that residential, you're taking 250,000 from the undeveloped north, and you're taking, $50,000 from residential undeveloped south and showing them as inside the gate residential, but they're not. There's 300,000 of that 1,175,000 of the special tax that doesn't come from the residential. It comes from undeveloped property.
John,
we know based on the way the Prop J or Measure J was put together is not actually what services are being performed for the various customers. We know that because of the economic and planning systems report that demonstrates that, and that what was promoted to the Measure J ballot was, as you said earlier, John Merchant, it was a political process to get votes, and it basically disenfranchised the non-voters, which were the development company and the landowners who didn't live in the community.
John,
go ahead, Tom.
John, we have that information. I can tell you by parcel how much property tax and how much special security tax every single parcel in the district is paying in fiscal year 1920. So what we didn't want to do is have a 3,000 row spreadsheet. So we can take residential and go developed and undeveloped with the click of the mouse. I just wanted to introduce this because the question came to us, and this is the work we have consolidated into basically five separate categories. So we can add, and Michelle's on the line, I mean, but it's, like I say, it could be from five rows to 3,000 rows. So the next time you see this table, we will break out undeveloped property inside the gates. And I guess we could also break out the country club.
I think we're one thing that, and as we go forward with doing something, if we do something, those are numbers that are worth identifying, because somewhere, and I don't know how you navigate through this, but in my head, I have seen a couple of opportunities where you could segregate the type and level of security you provide by the entity. And what I mean by that is, one hypothetical example would be to identify the costs of doing security across the Jackson Highway, the south side of the road. And their needs, and the times of their needs are completely different or unique to them when you compare them to what goes on inside the gate of the north and the south. And inside the gates of the North and the South, there are undeveloped entities on both sides. And there is on one side a great big country club that is unique to the operation as well. So again, this is just a thought process that if you segregate these and identify those costs, is it possible that by segregating them and identifying the cost, you could apply that to some type of a privatized security that in fact would be different and cheaper than what we provide inside the gate, which in itself is unique because it is driven by the gates, okay? So the big inherent cost of that operation is in gates, supplemented by patrol, where on the other side, it's strictly patrol, and maybe that patrol in a retail environment or a commercial environment is a dusk to dawn type of a thing. And I don't know if I don't have any answers, but using that data and recrafting this thing, there may be an opportunity here to get people more of what they want for a lesser price. And again, it's not fully defined, but it's starting to, in my head, it's starting to take shape that way, that there's an opportunity here that we should at least explore. And I don't know how you craft that into a referendum. I don't know how you split it out. I don't know who goes to jail if we do it that way. I don't have any of these answers, but it's in there. It's in there, and I think it's worth exploring. Crystal, we'll let you go next.
Thank you. Is there a way that I can get a copy of the cost allocation that you guys are referring to?
Yeah, you know, it was a board, it went to a board meeting a few months ago, but I'll send it to you, Crystal.
Okay, that'd be great. And my purpose for wanting to review that is to determine if the emphasis is on the correct issue. And if it's determined that the board wants to, you know, look at security and how the level of services provided and how that is funded, then I think it touches on the next question of, you know, whether the board wants community input. And I know that phrase was used, a short while ago in this meeting. And so then it begs the question of what is the best way? And I know that there's a discussion with respect to the survey. My concern there is cost, and that it's a fraction of the residents. And then there's a more detailed concern there. So first I'd want to know exactly what financials would be provided as part of that survey, and what questions will be asked. In terms of my line of business, if there is a certain, if I would like a certain result, and I apologize for my cynicism here, but if I favor a certain result, then the questions will be phrased in a manner that achieves that result. And I'm not suggesting anything nefarious. I'm saying, is there a way that the community or that those of us that attend these meetings will have an ability to review the financials and the questions that will be asked if a poll or a survey is ultimately what is selected to be used? And I personally have concerns about the cost with a poll and whether or not it is really useful in determining how the community, what level of services the community wants and what they're willing to pay for. In terms of private security, I know that several of you know my particular concerns with the level of services or services not provided by Observe and Report or Rent-A-Cop versus what this community has historically had. And so my hope is that this board will really actively try to communicate with the community to find out what it is we want, and then what that costs, and then how those costs are going to be allocated.
Crystal, at this point, wait a minute. And I appreciate the comments, and we can get into them. We have the next item on our list is all of that stuff.
Okay,
so,
no problem.
So let him just close out whatever we need to do here with these comparative rates for property tax and special tax, and then we'll get to that, and I'll let Tom introduce it, and then you can you can start that conversation and we'll go from there.
Okay, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Richard.
Hold on.
Whatever the hell your name is, Richard Public. Go ahead.
Okay, I just have one simple question on one simple number. Down on outside the gate for commercial under special security tax, it says 126,636. I got a spreadsheet from John Merchant that basically had these numbers, and basically they're in the proper range, except for that number. On John's number, I think it was 166,000. I assume one is right and one is wrong. Can somebody tell me which one?
Let's assume this one is correct, Richard. We refine the numbers as we've gone through and the iterations of how we wanted to present it.
Okay.
Yeah, Richard, I'm a graduate of the CBS School of Management, but I also took geometry twice. So
okay.
I would believe him before you would believe me.
No, we believe in Michelle, not me.
anybody else on this issue?
Yes, John, this is Tim.
Yeah, hi, go ahead.
I cannot let a comment by one of the public members let stand before we move on to the next portion of this. I want to make it very, very clear that security from day one has had the same expectations, and that is to observe and report. So when a comment is made that a person is worried about a private security firm and what they can do versus what security used to be able to provide, the expectations are the same. There's been no draft document. There's been no document that I've seen from when, however he started, Mr. Noller, he left as the security chief, started. The expectations have been the same. So please do not walk away, or please do not cloud other people's thought processes that somehow security today is different than what it was two budget cycles or five budget cycles ago. The only dramatic change that's been is we're not doing customer service with the animals, because that was taken away by animal control through the county. So I just want to make that clear that the confusion.
I respectfully disagree with that.
Well, and again, you can, but I can't let a statement stand that historically security was doing so much more expectational wise when we have no documents and no directives that have that. So I just want to make that perfectly clear. We can move on and have the discussion, what should security do and look like, but let's not confuse that somehow there was a greater sense of responsibility or expectation, because that has not changed.
Well, I think expectation and practice are different things. I think, you know, in talking with a lot of community members the last few months, what may be written down may be different than their involvement in the community and what people have come to appreciate and expect from security. So I appreciate that, but maybe that is a huge distinction that the board is not aware of, that while they may have an expectation of an observe and report, they've become a lot more to the residents of this community in the last, you know, few decades or the last few budget cycles. And so that's an important distinction and should be considered. I was out of line then.
No, and that's fine. It's one of those, again, perceptions reality. And so I understand that. And so as we're going through this exercise, and action is going to be taken by the board, the process and really what the community thinks security is capable of doing and what security is able to do because of the confines of the expectations that are written down are two different things. Sacramento County Sheriff's, they like having the security out here, and we work well with them. But at the end of the day, we're back to a bottom line dollar cost. And so we have to get that under control. That control may not match up with the expectations of the community, and therefore, hence we have to find some revenues. But to say that what they provided in the past or the expectation or how certain things have been handled from a procedural and a policy standpoint, none of that's changed.
There's the one part of this that I was hoping we've stepped away from, because over the last 30 plus years, I've probably been to 4 or 5 of these discussions where we have used, and I'll put it in quotes, the term police powers. And we have had residents advocate for that. And I don't mean we from CSD even particularly, but this board, but many boards in front of it, to where I thought we had finally crossed over the hurdle that folks understood that we simply could not afford to build a police force in Rancho Murrieta, and we could not afford to invoke, again, parentheses, police powers inside of our security department because of everything that came with it, financially and legally. We are just not a community of a size that would support that. So when we have this discussion around security and security being what it is, a observe and report function, I think there are things inside of that that would help us to identify what the expectations of the community will be going forward. And perhaps we can hang a cost on those. Some of those may be simply the community deciding that it wants to pay more money because it wants to increase the volume of patrol. And again, I'm trying to do this whole process without advocating for anything. But those are discussions I think we can have. But you know, I think maybe forgetting about or trying to identify what is the real expectation and what percentage, you know, what percentage of the community embraces that, because in a referendum it will have to be 67%. And so if we want to get into this, why don't we move to the next item? Is that okay with everybody?
John, I just want to be clear, if you guys want me to break this down a little bit more, I can, but this is not much of an action item. This is, the question was asked, we've answered the question. We can refine the data a little bit more if you'd like, and I got that direction from Mr. Sullivan, had the question. I can do that pretty easily and share that information with him. Do you want me to come to the board with this, or are we good? Question asked.
I think we're fine. If we, let's refine it, and if it reveals opportunities, we'll take those to the board. Let's just work with the numbers like we've been doing.
Okay.
And Tim, you agree with that?
Yes, I think that's fine. I think we make the adjustments that we have. You can just update us in your general manager's report. And then once we determine that we have our last best final number, then we can get that to the board members. And that would come in either an informational or attached to an action item as we move forward.
Tim, can I make a suggestion? I'll put a little bit of something in the GM report for October board meeting, and we'll refine the numbers as discussed, and we'll just bring back a quick little item to the next finance committee meeting.
Yes. I think everything's got to be sitting in finance until we can get really our last best and final, and then we can take it to the board with what we know, with all the other information that's coming from security, this next item that we have, and then the board can start having some earnest discussions from that standpoint.
Okay. Okay, Tom, move us up to, or Amelia, move us up to the survey.
Okay, there's been discussion about Measure J and do we need to go back to the voters and so on and so forth. We've discussed this in security. We've discussed it for more than an hour today. So I did some research and talked to some districts who've recently passed referendums for school bonds, for park bonds, and so on and so forth. And they all told me to be successful, you have to begin with a formal, scientifically supportable survey. And so we reached out to a couple firms that do this. And go ahead and go up a little bit or down a little bit, Amelia. You know, we wanted to find a graph that talked about where we're at. And this shows you the expenses of security and it shows you the revenue of security. And you can see the jump from year 22 to 23. That's when we applied a correct administrative overhead based upon a supportable cost allocation plan. So going back to the voters, to solve this problem, we need to begin with doing a special scientific opinion poll. And if you kind of scroll through this, the discussion, I don't want to read it verbatim, but we've, if you go down just a tiny bit more, get all the bullets in there. Okay, no, go back up again. Get the last paragraph. Okay, so based on our research, we're recommending that we issue an RFI, which is a request for information, to evaluate and select a polling service company with the experience and qualifications to design and manage a valid poll. The results of this survey will allow the board to determine the strategy for going forward. The cost of the survey, and this is why I wanted to bring this to the board, is between $15,000 and $25,000. And now if you get all the bullets in there, Amelia, Tim, you had asked the last time to the last meeting to kind of back into a schedule. So if you guys want to hold a special election in 2021, and you won't even know if you want to hold a special election until you get a qualified survey back, we need to issue a contract to a company, you know, by December or in this case, November, where we confirm the survey questions in the format. And then somewhere around mid-December, it's recommended to conduct the survey. And then with this schedule, what it is, in January 7th, we would come back to the security committee with results. And in the 20th, we could return to the board with a recommended strategy. Now, if the survey comes back and says, the likelihood of you increasing the rates that were established by Measure J are slim to none, then the recommendation is going to be not to go to the voters because we'd be wasting our money. An election would probably cost in the range of $150,000 if we hold a special election. If we wait for the general election in the spring of 2022, it'd be probably about between $40,000 and $80,000 less because the registrar of voters quoted us between $47,000 and $80,000 to hold a special election. So what I'm asking for today is permission to develop and issue an RFI. And I think I want to change that coming back to the board by October 21, because I really think I was overzealous in how much work I thought, how quickly we could turn this around. I want to come back to the finance committee with a recommendation on what firm to select to do the opinion survey, and then you'll have a real cost instead of between $15,000 and $25,000. We'll have a real quote, and we can get the committee to decide if that's the way we want to go. And I really appreciate Crystal's comments about ask the community what they want to know or what they want to ask, and I think we can do that in some way, shape, or form. To make sure that when the survey is conducted, the right questions are being asked. And you want to get a valid survey, you want to get about 300 to 400 respondents. And I think we can do that here at Rancho Marietta, because I think the interest is high enough that people will sit on the phone for the 20 to 30 minutes it takes to do a, you know, a survey that produces legitimate results that can then turn into the results of what the election would come out to be. If you want to change, if you want to have a referendum that we increase, that we replace Measure J with, we need a 66.7% vote, approval vote. And that's really hard to do these days. So I'm ready for a discussion on this or questions.
One of the things, Tom, you and I talked preliminarily to one of these highly respected, highly expensive survey companies, because I've been yelling about this since we did that security survey that we spent money on back in, I think it was 2016. And I didn't like it because it didn't, in my opinion, take enough community input. And when it did, it generated a survey that tells us something, and for those of you that are interested, I have it in a PDF format, and if I know who wants it, I'll be happy to send it out, because it was part of a bigger report that had lots of stuff in it, cameras and all kinds of stuff, but the end of it was a questionnaire, and you can draw from that everybody wants a whole lot more, and everybody wants to spend a very little amount of money to get it. But it's unscientific. It's not done the way that these professional survey companies approach these issues. And these companies, some of them specialize in doing exactly what we're trying to find out. Like, if you put a bond issue on a ballot, will it pass? And I think Crystal made some very valid points as well about a lot of this is what you want to ask. And I think that's the first real hurdle we have to get over. And there's parts of it, for example, we've fiddled around cost-wise with identifying what security from a patrol standpoint actually costs us when you figure in salaries and fringe, and compared that, for example, to off-duty sheriffs where they bring the car, and there's not a lot of disparity in the actual cost of that. So there needs to be some understanding before we go forward, is would you be willing to, or would you want to supplement, if you want more than a reserve, observe and report presence in the community, it's possible to provide that by blending in a random, unannounced amount of off-duty sheriffs. But that's a question in itself, because I've been to meetings through the years where there's a whole lot of people that live here that will tell you that they don't want a $600 stop sign violation. And they don't want points on their license. And they don't want that kind of enforcement within the gates. So how do you ask that as part of a survey where we know we could provide that, but that in itself could be a deciding factor on whether or not this thing could pass. So it's a lot more complicated. So we need somebody, it's going to cost money, but we need somebody with the skill to help us develop questions that will tell us what we really need to know. And it can't be, you know, we've had a whole big discussion over the RMA survey and whether that means we want a pool or whether it means we want this or we want that. But those are surveys that are concocted by people like me that are, you know, retired school teachers and firemen and record company executives that sit around a table and write a bunch of questions and then mail it out and get answers. That's not what we want this time. We need this to be done right. And we may need to make a $20,000 investment in this, but like Tom alluded to, I think by the time we're done, this could easily cost us a couple of $100,000 to get an answer. And that in itself is worthy of another discussion. So let's open it up if anybody has questions or comments.
John, this is Tim. Thank you to staff for putting this together. I like it. I think it's going to give us this type of information is really what the board is going to be needing to look at. So I would probably say, I would say we move or give direction to staff to initiate the process. Obviously, Tom will have to redefine some of the event schedule that fits us to this extent. And I guess one of the things I just want to reiterate, you know, it's taken us what appears to be a couple of fiscal cycles plus a decade or two to get into this mess. So it doesn't mean we have to completely get out of this mess this fiscal period. But the board has said it is going to be addressed within a two fiscal cycle. So I don't know if that changes a whole lot of the timelines, Tom, from that standpoint. But I just think the document you have is a great way to get us going from this standpoint. And I think that I would recommend we move this forward with direction to staff, and then this would probably be a presentation, if not an action item, on the board agenda.
Additionally, I have a hand up,
Mr. Yeah, John. Chairman. Go ahead, John. You there? Yeah.
He's not muted. I don't know if he's having difficulty. You can chat with us though. Oh, here you go. He's got his hand up again. Try unmuting yourself, Mr. Sullivan. We can't hear you. Or you can put it in the chat and I'll read it out to everybody. Okay, I see your hand is up, Mr. Sullivan, but we can't hear you. And you're not muted because I don't have the ability to mute you on my side. Maybe you can call in on a telephone line or chat with us. Okay, so I maybe we should go on, John, until we hear from him.
Okay. We're down at the bottom of the list here. Wait a minute. There's something here. There's a chat down there. You want to read it, Amelia? There's something.
Yes, thank you so much. He says, in order to go to the voters, you need an engineer's report.
Okay. We'll keep that in mind.
Is that like a 218 engineer or a guy that can drive a railroad train? Which is that?
I do know that that the process is going to be, you know, we do the survey, and if the survey says that we will be successful, that we will then go to a company who helps manage referendums for special districts. There's a handful in California, and they will help us navigate. So if it's required, as John is saying here in his chat, then I'm sure that we'll handle it correctly.
And he says, a survey isn't an engineer's report. Exactly, Prop 218 and 26.
Yeah. Okay.
We'll look at that. Any other questions or comments?
I don't have any other hands raised.
So we go down to Director comments, and I don't know what's left that we could discuss, honestly. Tim, do you have anything?
No, I'm good. Again, I think where we have thought that numbers or percentages were certain things. And as we get refined numbers, we're all going to get educated on it. So that's okay. I think that as we move forward, how staff is able to put these documents together and then the supporting documents behind them, really just can't say enough about how the finance staff, especially the last couple of months, everything we've asked of them, it's so much cleaner, more professional, and very forward on how the presentations are. And to that, it says a lot to the staff. And Tom, thank you for your efforts on that.
Oh, believe me, it's the staff, not me, making it better. Cindy and Michelle.
Yeah, I have the same comments. I mean, it's really been tremendous. I've never worked this closely with the internal workings of the staff as I have over the last 3 or 4 months, and it's been really, really gratifying to be able to make this kind of progress. Just the other comment on the ditch, the CIA ditch, I just wanted to make as we go forward to the board with this, just everybody understand, we have miles to go in this process. We're not ready to do much more than I think inform the board that this is what we've done so far and this is kind of where we're going. But there's the same kind of financial analysis that needs to go into this that's gone into all this other stuff. So just, you know, going forward, everybody just understand that we're not, you know, it's not, and nothing's going to happen there quick. I mean, it's going to be a while. Anything else?
I have nothing.
I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Then we can adjourn, and thank you everyone for attending.
Thank you.
Have a good weekend. Thank you.
Tuesday.
Good weekend, everyone.
Yes, you too.